Well, now comes what I think is a grand happening. Twisted her arm just a little. But, you know, our talkers here on Wednesday night, we're not out there to be great speakers for the universe. We talk from our hearts, because that's where God is. God is love. So God's right inside each and every one of us. And the one that's going to share her heart thoughts with us tonight is our J. Lorraine. Oh.
Good way to start. It's good to be here. Glad you're here. The bubble of God in me recognizes and greets the bubble of God in you. Namaste. I'll do that. Throughout history, we've actually used greetings to remind each other of who we really are. The Hawaiians would meet face to face, breath to breath, aloha, the ha meaning the breath of life, and it was to remind them of their source. When God created man, he breathed his breath into the body. Tonight I'm going to talk about expanding our definition of love. And the way we do that is by lighting the way for other people and loving through all our experiences, our losses, our dark times, and our light times. We are here to remind each other not to forget of who we really are, and to stay in love and to know that love is always the answer. Brings me to lighting the way, or what I like to call points of light. I think someone has shown up for me every time I need them, in spite of the time when I think I need them now and they're not there. But in hindsight, they show up when I really most needed them. And I think that that's an agreement, perhaps, that we make before we get here. I appreciate all of those people in my light that have allowed their light to shine for me. Many of you here tonight have done that for me in my dark times and in my light times, and I thank you for that. Thank you, Ray, for today. I believe we serve as lights or lanterns along our path. It helps for us to remind each other who we are and to access the love and strength that we all have. And I also think that by doing that for each other, we're able to live our full potential. Years ago, I listened to an interview with Carlos Santana, one of the world's greatest guitar players. He was at one of the lowest part of his life, and he was coming to a turn in his spiritual journey. Addictions had overtaken him, and he was given a message that if he was to bring a group together, a coalition of songs, different artists, a cooperation, that he would have success beyond any success he'd have previously. On his CD, which was named Supernatural, there's a song called Put Your Light On. It goes a little bit like this. Hey now, sinners, put your lights on, put your lights on. Hey now, lovers, put your lights on, put your lights on. It reminds the children to leave their lights on. Talks about monsters, or what I think negativity, under the bed, whispering in my ear. But there's an angel, and she's standing with her hand on my head, and she's reminding me there's nothing to fear. And he talks about a darkness in our soul that really still has a purpose to serve. And we're here to remind each other, to light each other's way, so we don't lose our nerve. And that's what the angel says, don't lose your nerve. I've been in shadow experiences in my life, and I thank God that angels in flesh and out of flesh have shown up for me, have told me there's nothing to fear, encouraged me not to lose my nerve, and actually sometimes to lose it. to give up, not to give up, and to keep showing up. We can all participate as God's instruments of love and light for each other. Your light is needed as much as anyone's. We are points of light, or like what I like to see is dots. It's kind of like we have these dots that we connect in our life. There's constellations in the sky, but there's also constellations in our lives. So you can stand back and look at these beautiful constellations being made because somebody was willing to stand up and shine for someone else. The last line of that song, the angel's telling you not to fear, and all you got to do is shine like a star. One of my points of light was my grandmother. She always held space for me, for my very best. She never made me feel that I had to feel sorry for myself or my situation. She loved me through up and down. Eventually, the woman that was my rock was lost to Alzheimer's. My love for her never faded. In fact, I'm sure that it grew stronger. When she was confined to a distant reality and in a wheelchair sitting next to me, there were others that told me, she doesn't know who you are. She's not there. She doesn't understand. But I didn't care what they said. She'd showed up for me, and I was ready to show up for her. I sat with her, and I held her hand, and I just felt. Those feelings sometimes are hard to feel, but that's what she'd done for me. You know, when you show up with love, you stay in the truth, and appearances do not dissuade you. Almost 20 years later, I showed up at this church, and I was at Angel Touch, and my grandmother Hazel came, and she was so excited to see me, and I was so excited to hear from her. She said, honey, I'm so glad you're on your spiritual journey again, and everything she felt was better on the Ritz, and she thought that's what it was like. Everything's better on a Ritz, and everything with God is better in life. There's a Native American tradition evaluating the value of a life well lived. The Great Spirit in the sky asks only one question when you're getting ready to go to that next level of heaven. Is there someone who is grateful you were born? Which takes me to my next point, loving through experiences, your ups and downs, your darks and light, or what I've come to feel, it's like love that's calling us forward. I've been expanding my definition of love all my life, like most of you probably have. There's a story that illustrates this really well for me. God has a slide carousel, if anyone can remember those. And a remote control. And he clicks, and a slide drops down into the projector. An image comes up. He says, can you accept this? Can you love this? Or can you love through this? First one comes up. Ah, sure, I can do that. Next one. I can do that. Next one. Maybe. Okay, I can do that one. Next one. I'm going to need a lot of help, but I'll do that one. The next one, are you kidding me? There's no way. And God lovingly says, okay, next. What happens is that slide, as we all know, the carousel, it comes back around. The slide eventually comes back around, and you get another chance. Can you love this part of you, Jaylareen? Can you love that person that hurt you? Can you love through that loss? Can you love someone who's wronged you? It's my experience that I find I get another chance to love myself and everybody else deeper and deeper. It just keeps coming back around. Again, my visual. It's the artist designer in me. I see life kind of like this series of columns. So like a colonnade, but in a circle. And you got a column on each side, and they're your signposts along the way. One might say born, your events. You learn to walk, you go to school, first love, first broken heart, betrayal. We can keep moving, or we can stroll through those. Some of us get to skip sometimes, hobble, and then sometimes we're crawling through that. When you cling to columns for dear life because you don't want to experience the next event, when you don't want to move forward, or you get too attached to a column because you've actually started identifying yourself with that, then the pain starts to build. Sometimes our light can get so dim we hardly recognize ourselves. I've been in deep depression before on more than one occasion when I was trying to hold on to a way of life that was over and had served its purpose. Maybe it's something we do in our human experience. When we keep looking back, we can be consumed by what was. It's like the story of Lot, and God's getting ready to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, and he tells Lot to take his family, flee the city, giving him a new start. Don't look back, though. So when they're leaving, Lot's wife turns back, and she turns into a pillar of salt. Well, in Sunday school, I was terrified of this story. I was horrified of it. And plus, my analytical mind would say, now, wait a minute. Didn't Lot miss his wife? Wouldn't he turn around to see where she was? And if he turned around, wouldn't he turn into salt? So, but lately, I started thinking about this in a different way. And that's really why I'm here, because Millie and I were talking about it. I'm looking at it now is when we dwell on our past experiences, they can harden us. We can become jaded and unable to move forward. It's like being frozen like a pillar of salt. Love for ourselves and for those around us can start melting those away. God's love melts things away. You may be thinking, but you don't know my year. You don't know what he did to me. You don't know my experience. And I don't. But I've been through the experiences in the last couple years that would have flattened most. And I'm here to shine a light for all of you, to remind you to love through all of your experiences. We have an opportunity in each moment to choose between love and fear, to let go of our past experiences and to live in the present moment, centered in God's love. This is not a static way of living. It's ever evolving, and it's a choice that we make. When I'm practicing in my awareness, I reach for even-mindedness, kind of middle of the road, so I can lead with God's love. But sometimes we get thrown off that center. Sometimes it's like that big machine, you know, that throws the pumpkins. And we're propelled off our center. But we're never far enough away that we're away from God's love. Experience does not, and I have to say this over and over, wherever you are, your experience does not define whether you are loved. Some of you know the story of Job. He was a good and faithful servant. He loved God. Is everybody okay? There's a point of light going right there. He was a good and faithful servant. He loved God. He had wealth. He had family. He had riches. And one day, God decides that he's going to allow negativity to take over Job's life. By the way, Job didn't get a memo on this. So he was not expecting it. Buildings collapse, he loses family, he loses wealth, he loses his life's livelihood, and then he starts getting sick. He has friends that start leaving, and then the friends that stay tell him, oh, you should curse God and die. That's it. This is too much. His wife tells him the same thing. Job went through a lot before he began to question God. He was calling out and he felt no response. But then, in some of the most moving verses about God's power, God begins to speak to Job. And these verses go on for almost 120 verses, and it describes the power of God. And God asked Job, "Where were you when I laid down the foundation of the earth? Declare it if you have understanding." The questions go on, and it brings Job to a point of realization that he knows very little of who God really is. "I heard of thee by the hearing of my ear, but now I see thee with my eye." Then we read that, and this is a good part, God turns the captivity of Job off. The negativity is taken away. But it's only after one thing. Job actually prays for the friends that told him to curse God and die. And when he does, God pulls the negativity off. And his life turns back around. For some time, Job's life looked desolate, but God loved him. He had not left him. God is present in our light and in our dark times, in our shadows. Even when we don't see him and even when we don't understand, we do not fully know the purposes of our experiences. Job's dark times serve to a divine purpose by opening the eyes of Job to the awareness of God's nature. The captivity of negativity was not a punishment. It was part of Job's journey to God, a test, some may say, a refining of character. Maybe we need the shadows to see the light. Which brings me to the shadow of death. I can tell you that 2 years ago, 1 month and 8 days, my life changed when I helped my sister through her passing. Death had been near me before, but not in this way. I'd lost my grandparents, I'd lost aunts and uncles, and some friends. I was guided to this church less than a year prior. I'd been asking for a direct relationship with God. I remember saying, "I want to be able to get the answers from you. I don't want to have to keep asking everybody else." I don't think that's a wrong thing to do. But I wanted the next level. I had somewhat soured on putting my life in other people's hands. I wasn't really pleased with the results, actually. By the time I came to church, I had been betrayed, abandoned, abused, ridiculed. And as the first message from Millie, she said to me, you've been treated pretty rudely by people. Her eloquent way of saying it. And you don't understand it. Of course, I burst into tears. And then I said, OMG, somebody gets me. And then she told me, pray for them. Pray that their life gets better. Pray for those people that hurt you. And that's what I did. And there is nothing that felt better. Through a variety of events, I ended up at her classes. And as all of you know, if you've been there, there's nothing like it. I was really excited and happy. And I remember sharing the story with my sister on the phone. She was the only family member I could talk to at the time about it, because it's not exactly what's accepted at my home. But she was nearing her death, and she was open to so much more at the time. When we were talking about her trip to come out to visit me over the summer, she said, "Can we go to that church?" And I got a little scared for a minute. I went, "Oops, I forgot I wasn't supposed to say anything," because I was so excited I was sharing. And then I was so excited I was going to get to share this with my sister. by the time she came to visit, she was very weak and tired and bloated from chemo. And I tried to do the best I could to keep her comfortable and hot baths and good foods and kitties. And on Saturday, we went to visit Millie. And I sat to the side. Millie prayed with my sister and asked the angels for a touch-in. The first thing out of Millie's mouth was, "Give me a D. My nephew, Dustin, my sister's son, had been born prematurely, and he had only lived a little while. My grandfather showed up also, and there were many other things that took place that day that allowed my sister to know that she knew. And I thank you for that, Millie."
I said all of
you. Yeah. I traveled back and forth to take care of my sister, and I was taking the healing classes. I really loved the healing classes, but before they ended, I was not able to finish because I was with my sister. When death comes, your schedules get interrupted. Fear can't hold it back, and denial won't keep it back either, but I spent a lot of time there. I've been through a lot of difficult times in my life, and a lot of them I had to do on my own. And I am so grateful I didn't have to do this one with blinders on. Reverend Millie provided the light, love, and lightened my load as I walked through the valley of death with my sister. She said, "Hold tight to God's finger." And I've been doing it ever since. I'm so glad for the blessing of Millie. Untiring love and devotion to all she meets. I have never known anyone so consistent in their flow of love as she. Because of her, I have learned I am not alone. I walk with God in a way that I never did prior, and I am honored and humbled by her example and what her connection she provides for all of us. I walk to the valley of death, deep, dark, scary, awkward, and I became the calm in the storm. I recall at one time saying to Millie, when I realized my sister wasn't going to make it, "Mill, I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this." She said, "Honey, all you have to do is love." So simple, so profound, so utterly frustrating if you want somebody to tell you what to do with your life. But for me, it was all the marching orders I needed. I know that life is about choosing love over fear. It just keeps getting expanded upon. If you think you love now, wait. Just wait. It's going to change if you let it. We've moved my sister into my parents' home, and events have blurred between the hospital and hospice. Every moment I asked myself, what would love do? I rubbed feet, got hot blankets, brushed teeth, prayed. I even practiced the healing when she was asleep. My sister, my older sister, utilized her gifts brilliantly by telling the doctors what to do and ordering meds. I just had love to give. I had to leave for a couple days for work, and I was in an airport when I got the phone call that the cancer had spread to her brain. I sat there on a bench, and I was vacant. It wasn't like I felt I was even in my body, and there was all these people moving by me. And it was like in the movie, in slow-mo, when you see it all become like a stream. And then there was someone who turned. And they turned to me and they asked me, "Are you okay?" And I wasn't. But it was just enough to get me back clear in what I was doing and get back on a plane to Arizona. That person was a person, a stranger, willing to show up, to shine their light, to guide my way in a time that I needed it. I drove back and forth across the desert a lot, and one of those times I was driving, I got a phone call from Millie. Now, mind you, I hardly know Millie right now. So the phone rings, and she says, "Who's the man sitting next to you in the plaid jacket?" I was driving alone. It was my grandfather, and my grandfather was keeping me on the road, helping me, protecting me, because I was having a hard time at it. But he was also there. He showed up to tell me, "Don't worry, I'm getting things ready. I'm going to be there for her." And he was like gathering everybody together. There were a lot of relatives waiting. When I drove across the desert, I started seeing life metaphorically a lot. I would see my sister's profile laying in the mountaintops. I would see this life like the mist that raced up from the desert in the morning through the mountains into the sky. It's like in that song, when you're in the valley, you see things more clearly, or you see both sides more clearly. It's like then I was seeing life and death, or what we call death, and the afterlife, all as one. The last stretch, my older sister and I were surviving on about 2 or 3 hours of sleep. We were taking turns caring for my sister, and it really was taking a physical toll on us. But what happened, this undescribable energy sort of takes over. It just moves through you and helps you show up for what you have to do. There's a book called Jesus Calling, and it's a devotional, and I'd like to read you just a bit about it. There's one that's based on, and I got to tell you, Kimberly, it's in the book. It's on November 11th, so 11-11. It's Ephesians 1, 18 and 19, and Psalms 105:41. And it talks about the strength given when needed. Do not let any set of circumstances intimidate you. The more challenging the day, the more of my power I place at your disposal. The degree to which I strengthen you on a given day is based mainly on two variables: how difficult the circumstance, and how willing you are to depend on me for help. Try to view challenging days as an opportunity to access more of my power than usual, and look to see where I show up. As your days, so shall your strength be. For me, when death approached, when my loved one was in pain and nearing departure, nothing else was important to me. Everything just sort of faded away in the background. There in the dim room, with the only sound of the oxygen hissing, I spooned with my sister and held her and loved her. My older sister asked me one day, she was talking about how I was treating Carrie. I said, "All I'm doing is loving her." She said, "I know, and I've learned to love by watching you." I knew then that if I ever got that question from the spirit in the sky, that I could say, yes, someone was better off for me being here. With the CD of my grandfather's fiddling playing and all of us surrounding my sister, she took her last breath. Just a small amount of time later, Millie was able to touch in with her. And among so many things she had to say to me, one was, "Na na 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 na." It's like 1, 2, 3. And I knew that I knew. Her death was followed by my best friend's mother a month later. 2 months later, one of my very best friends from high school passed, and I've had touch-ins from all three. In the book, Conversations with God, number 3, there's a parable, and I'm going to paraphrase it a bit. There's a soul in heaven getting ready to have their earthly experience, and they're having a conversation with God. He says, "You can choose any experience of God that you'd like to experience." The soul goes, "I'm going to experience forgiveness." "Well, that would be kind of hard because there's nothing to forgive." "Well, this sounds interesting." So a lot of souls start crowding in. And somebody in the crowd goes, "Wait a minute. I'll volunteer, I'll help, I'll do something you have to forgive. How could you do that? We'll think of something. Why would you do that? Because you've done it for me before. I'll help do something that you have to forgive. We've made agreements so that we each can experience ourselves as the grandest part of God. You want to experience forgiveness, but just remember, you have to promise me when I spite you, when I hurt you, when I do something that's unforgivable, when I go through something that's hard to accept, you have to remember who I am. Our points of light are often concealed in darkness. It may look like something that you can't love, but I'm here to remind you that you can love. You are loved. You're a child of God. You pass through it with love like the colonnade and try very hard not to hold on very long, too tight to your signposts. Don't forget who you are, fellow bubbles. Keep your lights on. Love through your experiences, the dark and the light. When you're given difficult situations, ask and know your strength is given. You can grow through your experiences. Expanding your love is easier than constricting it. I know my divine connection never ends. I know that all that matters is love. In the dark times and in the light times, I am grateful for all these beautiful, challenging experiences that allow me to evolve my ability to love on a greater level, to embrace and appreciate all that I have. In closing, I just wanted to share something that I heard when someone said recently, "Why would you love if you know it's going to end?" I say the only thing that ends is your interpretation or your definition of love. And when it does, shout hallelujah. Shout gratitude at the top of your lungs, because you're getting ready to get a new dose of it if you let it. And it will surpass any ability you've had previously to love. Namaste.
What do you think?